Greetings, humans, living and dying in the Anthropocene. This is Jamming Their Transmission, where rebels, freaks, critics, dissidents, iconoclasts, and oddballs live. I'm your fellow traveler, John Madero. This is Jamming Their Transmission. I'm John Madera. For the next few episodes of Jamming Their Transmission, I'll be speaking with artists, literary and otherwise, about life during the contagion. Today, I'll be speaking with Tony Trujillo, Carol Guess, and Davis Schneiderman. My first call is with Tony Trujillo, author of many books, including the recently published Ghosts of the Upper Floor, The Complete Dark Shadows of My Childhood, Book 3.
Hey, John, how you doing?
Hi, Tony. I'm doing well, thanks. And thanks for being on Jamming Their Transmission.
Oh, thanks for calling. This is great.
Let's start with you telling me where you are.
Well, I'm in Chicago, in the Rogers Park neighborhood where I live. I'm about a block from Lake Michigan, and staring out my living room window. It's sunny, at least, and I'm locked down with the rest of us.
How has quarantine been going now for you so far?
Well, it's been, I've been trying to bring as much normalcy into my days as I possibly can. Trying to just like get up around the same time, eat breakfast around the same time, meditate, allow myself time for late morning freakouts. Breakfast and lunch roughly the same time, just sort of like pretending it's normal, so that when my mind wanders and I think about how awful things are, I can handle it a little bit better.
So what does a freak out look like for you, Tony?
Yeah, that's a great question. It begins with, real worries about, really intense worries about the health of my loved ones. Luckily, no one I know has been sick, and I haven't been sick, not yet, any of us. But it begins with that, and then it expands into worries about really the social fabric, like how much stress can the social fabric take before it's too much stress, and so then it just kind of rolls. The freak out kind of rolls from there.
Please talk some more about your meditation practice.
Yeah, I meditate every morning, and the meditation has just like the at the most fundamental level, what I'm trying to do is just let thoughts and feelings arise when they arise, whether they're scared, freaked out feelings or happy feelings, whatever they are, just let them arise, and then let them run their course, and then they pass, and then new ones come. And that's really helped me, the regularity of practice. I've done it for a couple of decades now, and it's really coming, it's really becoming crucial right now during the quarantine, because when I'm not sitting on the meditation cushion, and if I'm having a freak out, or even if I'm happy, either way, because there are great moments in between all the scared ones, it lets me just allow whatever feelings come up, especially if they're the scary ones, let them kind of run their course like a tantrum, like when a kid has a tantrum and you just let them have the tantrum until they get tired, and then they're exhausted and it's done.
What are some of the scariest thoughts you're having lately, Tony?
I'd say my scariest thoughts are really just the idea that things could get worse than I even imagine they are right now. Each day I think I sort of catastrophize how bad it can really be. And then I I hear something from Washington or I experience something that just makes me think, it's almost beyond our imaginations right now. And I don't want to produce freakouts in people listening to the podcast either, because I also have, really good moments thinking that we can, when we get through this, we might have a greater collective sensibility in the U.S. anyway. And that would be great if we did.
Are you seeing some signs or promise of that collective sensibility in your own life, your own community?
Yeah, I really cherish those moments. Just like, I think everyone in my neighborhood, it's a great neighborhood, and everyone in my neighborhood, well, not everyone, but generally my neighborhood's a really friendly place. And I just feel like people are looking out for each other a little bit more. My neighbors are looking out for each other a little bit more. There's just more of a sense of we're trying to collectively get through a trauma together. And it's not true in every instance, but I just feel like little gestures, little looks, little conversations give me hope.
Please give us a snapshot of what Chicago's government has so far done, what measures they've taken, et cetera.
It's been pretty good, I have to say. There was one really low point, and it was St. Patrick's Day weekend, and tons and tons of people crowded into bars to celebrate, even though they knew this was the worst thing you could do for the plague. There were tons of people packed into bars, and
you didn't drink for Tomorrow We Die?
Yeah, except I think they were leaving out the Tomorrow We Die part. I think they were in denial about that. And but a lot of eating and drinking, and the governor and the mayor, you could see real human anger from them, not the politician facade anger, like just a frustrated anger. And the mayor, Lori Lightfoot, especially was just really angry, thinking about, with the lack of support from the federal government, we're all communities, we're kind of on our own right now. And she, these weren't her exact words, but her attitude was like, we're on our own, we have to act better than this. And then it was a day later, the governor ordered bars and restaurants closed. And then a couple days after that, we went on lockdown, and which is as frustrating and scary as it is. Yeah, I think we needed to after what happened on St. Patrick's Day weekend.
How has lockdown affected your work life?
Well, I'm just trying to carry. I'm very lucky that my job, I teach at Columbia College, Chicago. My job is not affected right now, except, just change. Everyone's changing to online teaching, but I've taught online components before, and it's not as great as face to face, but it's good. And so I'm really, really fortunate that it hasn't affected my job yet. And in terms of my writing and reading, I've been, as part of my effort at normalcy, I've been trying to just read what I want to read, and at times let myself read stuff that's just like, has nothing to do with literary life too, which is great. And then, working on my own projects too. It's been very, those moments of like deep reading and deeply engaged reading and writing have helped me get through the fear of the lockdown and feel relatively okay. Yeah.
Tell us about some of the things you've been reading lately.
A few weeks ago, a former student of mine posted on Twitter about a podcast he had written for this. He works for a podcasting company, and he had done an episode on the Julius and Ethel Rosenberg case. Mm-hmm. And I listened to it. It was a great podcast. And I was like, I've only known the bare contours of what happened. So I bought a book written by New York Times reporter Sam Roberts about the case, and it was engaging. I started reading that at the very beginning of lockdown, and it was good to, as awful as the story was, it was also something I felt like I needed to know, and I was able to lose myself in it. And then I've been reading this science fiction novel. I keep forgetting the name. I think it's called Nemesis Games. Sorry, I forgot the name because I just remember that it's a novel that it's part of the series that the TV show The Expanse was based on.
Very cool. My daughter and I have been watching this show.
Oh, it's amazing. It's amazing. And I haven't read the whole series, but, I was complaining to my cousin when I finished the most recent season. I was like, I want more of The Expanse. And he said, well, just begin with Nemesis Games. It picks up where the last episode left off. So I've been doing that. And then I've also been reading Theodore Rethke's collected poems, and his epiphanies in the natural world have kind of been, I love his language, and they've been really great to remind me of what's out there while I'm locked in or locked down, and then I've been reading the third installment of Karl Ove Nosgaard's My Struggle. I wasn't really into the second book, but I'm enjoying the third book, and it's been another good thing to keep me going in the lockdown.
You also said that you're writing. Tell us more about what you're working on.
I've been working on book four of my Dark Shadows project. And, you know, it's a hybrid poetry and prose experiment and autobiography. And like I for the project, I really have to write about what's, you know, the way I've set it up. I have to write about what's happening in my life in the present moment. And so I've been writing a little bit about life under lockdown and with the life with the virus, this invisible invader all around us, you know, and it's been really good to be working on that. And I've also been working on standalone lyric poems. And I'm just this afternoon, I was tweaking a new manuscript of lyric poems that might be done. I think it's close. And so it's been good to work on that, too. Yeah.
What would you say to writers and other artists listening right now by way of encouragement?
Yeah, I guess maybe what I've been trying to say to myself too, which is like, if we're being really productive, that as artists, that's great. And that's nothing to feel guilty about, because there's a real, you know, there's a necessity for the creative spirit and the imagination, even in really traumatic times, maybe more so in traumatic times. So like, if we're feeling productive, let's not feel guilty about that. And then also, if we're not productive, let's not feel guilty about that, because this is a traumatic time and there are going to be days that you want to write. And I'm speaking again for myself, days when I want to write. And what's going on is just too much to bear, and it's hard enough to just get through it. And so it's okay when we're not productive too.
Thanks so much, Tony Trigilio, for being on Jamming Their Transmission.
Oh, this was great. It was great to talk with you, John. Thanks for doing this.
Oh, likewise. Take care. Right.
You too. Have a great day.
This is Jamming Their Transmission. I'm John Madera. I'm checking in with writers and other artists about life during the contagion. I just spoke with Tony Trigilio in Chicago, and now we'll speak with writer Carol Guess. Carol Guess is the author of many books, including Girl Zoo, which she wrote in collaboration with Amy Parkinson. Hi, Carol. It's John Madera.
Hi. Great to hear from you. Thanks for calling.
Absolutely. Thank you for being on Jamming Their Transmission. How are you?
I'm doing okay. How are you doing?
I'm doing well, thanks. New York City hasn't had a single case of the coronavirus yet. So we're doing perfectly fine.
You're doing great. I know, it's really hard to know how to answer that how are you doing question.
No, where are you? Where are you now?
I'm in Seattle. Seattle. We're the epicenter, so we're doing just fine as well.
Mm.
Yeah.
How has the contagion been affecting you? How has social isolation been affecting you so far?
You know, that's a really great question. I'm struggling a lot to write. And I feel like that's an unoriginal thing to say. And it's a privileged problem right now. I think I feel really grateful to have my job. But the social isolation has been hard, even though I'm a deep introvert and often go days without having a lot of contact with people.
Mm-hmm.
This is a different kind of isolation. It's not something that I'm choosing. And I really miss the inspiration that I get from hearing people's conversations and just sharing small moments throughout the day. I'm surprised at how much I miss it.
What do you do for a living?
I am a professor. I teach at Western Washington University in both the undergraduate and the graduate creative writing program.
Have all of your classes gone online?
Yes, we are now online, and we're on spring break this week, technically. Okay. So I'm using spring break. We're all using it to try to figure out how we're going to teach our classes.
So you actually haven't started online classes yet? Oh, I see.
Yeah.
Have you integrated that component into your classes before, or will this be totally new for you?
It's going to be totally new.
So what will your course load be?
I'm teaching only one class this coming quarter, so I'm very lucky.
So have you heard from some of your students and colleagues about how they're doing through all of this?
My colleagues and I have been talking a lot, and that's actually great. Talking on the phone, talking on email. I feel like we've been really candid with each other about the stresses and about the things we're hoping to do. Mm-hmm. So that conversation feels great. I haven't heard from my students yet, but we just wrapped up one quarter and we're starting the next. So they were just finishing exams from the chaotic last quarter that ended with 1 week of online teaching.
Earlier you said you've been trying to write, but you were having some difficulty, which reminded me of one of my favorite quotes about writing by Thomas Mann, who said, quote, "A writer is someone for whom writing is more difficult than it is for other people." So it has it been more difficult for you lately, or is it something else entirely?
That's a great question. Yeah, it's much more difficult. I'm usually prolific. I write sort of, it's not like a big ritualized thing. It's just something that's always ongoing. It's like, you know, there's always this sort of writing happening, and I really like that. I feel really lucky that that's the way my brain works. Mm-hmm. But right now, that is not there. It's sort of like there was a river and the river is dried up. And I don't know why. I mean, I can think of lots of reasons. I think some of it is just that I find this whole situation very scary. Mm-hmm. I hate the thought of, you know, my mother's older, and I hate the thought of anything happening to her, anything happening to my friends. So I think that fear and anxiety is kind of drowning out the writing voice. But I also feel sort of guilty because I feel like I really need to be doing something right now, like having a response to this terrible situation. And I don't know what that is. And, you know, hopefully it'll come back. I don't know.
Do you have any other creative outlets and or recreational or exercise routines?
Yeah, I've been doing yoga videos, and I've been running and walking every day. Yeah, I'm doing lots of those things. And I have a dog, so we are outside all the time.
Are you in Seattle proper?
Yes, so, I am. Very busy part of Seattle.
What's the vibe out there on the streets?
Oh my gosh, it's so weird. It's so quiet. There's so few people out. During the day, there are cars, much less than usual, but there have been times when I've just walked the dog down the middle of the street and there's no people, no cars. The other thing that's happening that I'm fascinated by is when I walk the dog like at 10 or 11 at night, there are so many wild animals out.
Oh, wow.
That, you know, obviously live in the city, but we don't see them. We don't see raccoons and we don't see rats as much during the day. But wow, it's crazy.
Do you see any changes with your dog?
Yeah, my dog is super anxious and so is my cat. But I think that might be because usually I'm not home like this. I'm usually at the office. I'm, you know, much of the day I'm gone. And I think both of them sort of wondering what I'm doing here.
Have you been reading?
A little bit. Mm-hmm. I have been reading a little bit. I would teach Carmen Machado's Inventory first thing next quarter. So right. I'm rereading her book, which I love. And I just picked up, I haven't read it before, weirdly. I'm doing this class on fairy tales, but I haven't read The Bloody Chamber.
Angela Carter, yeah.
Collection. So I'm super excited to read that for the first time.
Oh, that's a great book.
Yeah.
And what about checking in with the news? Are you a person that's checking in often, or are you trying to keep a limit on that?
I am on 24/7. Like, I'm very, very invested in the news, and I don't find that makes me more anxious. I feel like when I don't know what's happening, I'm anxious. And I also sort of feel like I have a responsibility to understand this moment as it's unfolding as a teacher and as a writer, which doesn't mean I would feel critical of anyone who doesn't. I mean, everyone right now needs to be taking care of their mental health. Mm-hmm. I completely get that. I have friends who won't even, you know, check the paper anymore, but I'm really dialed in and watching it unfold. Yeah, it's scary.
What's the most scariest thing about this for you?
I think the fact that Trump and the Republicans have made it so blatant that they don't care about human life. Mm-hmm. I mean, I knew that. We knew that. I believe we all knew that. But to see it just blatantly said out loud, you know, well, older people should be willing to sacrifice their lives for the stock market. That's been the scariest thing in the last 48 hours.
What would you say to people who are struggling right now, emotionally, psychologically?
Oh my gosh. I would say I really, really feel for you. And I guess I would say you're not alone. You're really not alone. And if there's any way to feel less alone, whether that's connecting, sometimes it helps me to connect to the natural world, even just like the raccoons and the rats in a weird way. Like they're out there, they're sentient, we're sentient. To say hi to someone on the street, I don't know. I feel like I have such an inadequate answer to that question. And that is such an important question, because this is a crisis. And I think we're all going through a collective grief process.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. You said that under normal circumstances, you're quite prolific, and now you're not, but you seem okay with that, as if it were just a wave. What would you say to people who are really struggling or beating themselves up about not being able to make something right now?
I think that's a great question, too. I am a little bit okay with it. Some of that is because I have gone in waves. Like, I've had like a year where I didn't write at all, and then I wrote a book the next year. I do tend to work in waves, so maybe this is just a wave. Mm-hmm. But what I think I would say to people is one of the questions that's coming out of this is the value or lack thereof of capitalism, of a society where we're always being pushed to make more product, to value product over people. Mm-hmm. And I think that it's really important in creative writing, for those of us who teach workshop, and for writers who are not affiliated with the Academy both, it's important for us to try to question how that model, that capitalist model of production over people, how that might have influenced our understanding of our art. I think that there's a push to produce and produce and produce and be prolific. And maybe this is the moment we question that. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Thank you so much, Carol, for being on Jamming Their Transmission. Such a pleasure to have you on the show.
Oh, thank you for giving me a chance to speak with you. It was great to talk.
Thanks again, Carol. Until next time.
Okay, bye-bye.
This is Jamming Their Transmission. I'm John Madera. I'm speaking with artists, literary and otherwise, about life during the contagion. My next call is with Davis Schneiderman, a multimedia artist and author of many books, including the forthcoming short story collection, There Is No Appropriate Emoji.
Hello?
Davis Schneiderman, it's John Madera.
Hi, John, how are you?
I'm doing well. Thanks for being on Jamming Their Transmission.
Oh, happy to do it. Are you holding up okay?
Oh, yes, absolutely. I've just been so impressed with the federal government's response to the coronavirus so far. Seriously, though, Davis, where are you now?
I am right now in Lake Forest, Illinois, just a few blocks from Lake Forest College, where I currently serve as the dean of the faculty and provost.
So tell us how you are. Are you in quarantine right now?
We are in shelter in place, which is a statewide mandate from Governor Pritzker, but it is a couple steps short of a full quarantine, and I have not been exposed or infected myself, and neither has my family.
And by we and your family, who are you talking about?
So I'm in the house right now with my wife, Kelly Haramis, who is an actor, and our two daughters, Athena and Calista, who are 12 and 13, and they're doing pretty well and engaged in e-learning with their school district, but they're actually technically on spring break this week.
And how is everyone doing with the changes so far?
I think good. You know, in many ways, John, it's the early days of what I think is a new reality. And part of the challenge of all of this is the continual adjustment, right? You make small adjustments in your behaviors and engaging with other people or going outside or shopping or learning. And what you don't really know at this point is how long those adjustments will need to be in place. Are things temporary? Are they a longer form of temporary? Are we entering into a kind of constrained new environment? And I think for many people, that uncertainty is part of the second pandemic. You know, pandemic one is the actual virus. Pandemic two is the amount of headspace you have to devote to all of it, which is real and changes things.
How have the changes with everything affected your workplace, your modes of working?
I'm standing at my standing desk, which I brought from my office to home before the shelter in place order came, but like many colleges, we have switched to remote instruction for the semester. And like many colleges and universities, and particularly small colleges, we did not engage in distance learning before this. So it is a new world for all of our faculty. I'm spending a lot of time working with my great colleagues to support that transition, which has been rapid.
And how have the technological transitions been for you personally?
Yeah, it's interesting. You know, we're Facebook friends, and maybe you've seen almost every day I take a screenshot of myself with a different Zoom background. Yesterday, it was a scene from 2001. The day before, it was Alice in Wonderland, which I do just to lighten the spirits of the people I am Zooming with all day long. But also because I think a lot about the kind of human technology interface and the fact that I went from a very personal experience, a place where there's a lot of small grouping and one-on-one interaction, to this environment where I'm basically in front of the computer all day, just video conferencing people. And there are interesting things to think through about that are very much with me. I almost have sort of Zoom exhaustion at the end of the day.
Are you finding yourself able to write and read during this time?
Yeah, it's interesting, right? You see so many people, and everyone's in different places and has different workloads and different experiences, who have some version of this. I'm going to use this time to just fully devote myself to my work. And I admire that. And I think that's great if people can do that. I do find, just because there's a lot of logistical details that I am one of many people trying to help with for my job, that I'm not having a lot of time for those things. But I'm also allowing myself, and I think everyone needs the forgiveness that it's okay not to be quote unquote productive. I mean, one of the interesting things about a time like this is, for me, it redefines productivity. And I think it raises all of those questions, which you and I have talked about before. I'm always asking myself, you know, why write? I always want writing to be a public act, and it is always personally transformative. But I do worry that sometimes things like this can reify a lot of those romantic tendencies of kind of the isolated poet in the garret producing work. I have no problem with people who take that position, but that's never really been my position in the best of times. Probably is not my position now. So all of these things are kind of swirling together for me.
Thanks, Davis. During this time of this contagion, I can't help wondering about what William S. Burroughs might say about the current moment. I can't help thinking about a statement of his that, quote, language is a virus, unquote. As a Burroughs scholar, would you respond to these thoughts and what you think Burroughs might say about all of this, about virality, about language being a virus?
Yeah, it's a great question. And I've thought about it a little bit, because, as I may have also told you in another conversation, I am engaged right now in a long archival project working with the Burroughs Estate and my wonderful co-editor, the scholar and writer Marcus Thune at the University of York, which is basically a collection of, charting the collaboration between William Burroughs and Brian Geisen over a 20 or 30 year period, particularly as it relates to their work, The Third Mind, which means when two people collaborate, a third mind is produced. It's all about collaboration. And while the Burroughs virus thing, I think he meant it in the kind of throes of 1960s space opera, a sci-fi, post-war control madness as a literal thing. I mean, really, to believe that the language was a virus and that it had a viral aspect. What's much more interesting to me about Burroughs' legacy now is the way that he suggested in so many different texts of how people could manipulate reality simply in the ways that we record and present reality. So there's lots of interesting texts on this. The Invisible Generation, for one, which is late 60s, around 1970, I may be off there. But basically, you know, go out in the streets, record the sounds of a riot, go out in the street and play those sounds, and you would be able to foment that same activity. And I've been thinking about that sort of thing so much in the lead up to all of this, where we were just simply in a space of fake news, what's real, what's not real. And so many of the difficult political spaces we find ourselves in were predicted very much by Burroughs. Another kind of Burroughs text here that I think speaks to this is his short book from the 70s called Blade Runner, right? Which is different than Blade Runner, the movie that everyone knows, although the title comes from Burroughs. And it's an near future where the healthcare system is broken down and, you know, people do back alley operations. They are blade runners. People are sort of struggling any way they can to find healthcare. It's much more complicated than that. But again, all of those things become operative in interesting ways.
When you said Marcus Boone, that's the person who wrote In Praise of Copying, right?
Yeah, we've been working together on this project since 2004.
Oh, wow.
And through a heck of a lot of false starts, but we are deeply into it now. We have, for the last year, just been digging through mountains of archival material, Burroughs, Geissens. We found a whole bunch of interesting letters recently. This is really a side of Jason's thing from Genesis P. Orridge. To Burroughs and Geissen in the 70s when Genesis was young. He just passed away a week or two ago. So right. There's just a great delight in being in the archive, and I've taken a little bit of solace. I do that anyway. I enjoy being deep in the archive. There's a place to be sort of archivally focused. But for me, that is a little bit of a break from the rest of the difficult reality right now as well.
What would you say to people who are having a really difficult time emotionally, psychologically, whatever you want to call it, during this time?
Well, let me preface that by saying I'm not a therapist, so I'm just telling you, and I have no professional designation to be one, but I'll just tell you my things, which is give oneself permission not to be productive. Like, it is okay not to feel like you have to be doing these things that either your friends on the internet are telling you you should be doing or other things like that. And I think everyone needs to privilege safety and self-care. For me, that manifests as trying to go outside and take a walk. I mean, yesterday I found myself, it was relatively warm here in the 50s in the Chicago area. It's a little colder today. Just taking a sunset walk and just listening and watching trees. You know, I love to just stare at trees and the kind of spreading rhizomatic networks, not completely rhizomatic because they have trunks, but I see the different pieces of them in that way. And I try to listen to place and be really grounded in my place and not feel like I'm trapped in my home, but to feel more like I'm in a place that has lessons for me if I allow myself to see it in new ways.
Thank you. One final question before I let you go. There are many doomsday scenarios, and it's almost easy to come up with them at this point and have been if you're paying attention. So I'm going to ask you a different question. What gives you hope or what has given you hope? And what are some, you've mentioned some bright moments of things that you've been doing, but what are some other things that have given you hope or give you hope?
Yeah, I mean, thanks. That's a great question. And this runs a little bit counter to what I just said about don't feel the need to be productive, because I think anybody who wants to make things, that's a great way to be hopeful. I mean, art, in all of the ways that you know very well, and you've been a tireless booster for reading, writing, watching, listening, feeling, you know, looking for any way to channel that desire for human connection that maybe you get your fix of when you're out to be around people. You get that fix continually by just encountering words and images and creating spaces where those things can sort of be living, breathing, and feeling along with you. So for me, that there is a tactile world that can be reclaimed through art and through writing and through literature.
Are there some artists in particular who are capturing your mind right now?
Yeah, it's a good question. And I think I sort of, like many people, you know, just go book to book to book. Most recently, I'm in the midst of My Red Heaven, which I know you're well familiar with, and I'm enjoying it greatly.
Excellent.
I also recently had the occasion to read Ocean Vuong's On Earth We Are Briefly Gorgeous. And I will just tell you, completely blown away by it, John. I don't know if you had a chance to read it. I am rarely blown away by a book anymore, because I think I'm middle-aged, jaded enough, and I've read many things to have some unfair version of, I've seen that before, but that book, On Earth We Are Briefly Gorgeous, just really took my breath away in a way that I was delighted to encounter and really surprised to encounter.
Excellent. Well, Davis, thank you so much for being on Jamming Their Transmission. Always a pleasure to speak with you.
Thank you so much for having me, and I wish you and your family well.
I wish you the same.
Well, it looks like we'll be in this fraught and contingent zone for some time, so I hope it's okay to check in with you again.
Oh, it absolutely is. And, you know, turnabout is fair play, so I'd be happy to check in with you for an episode of your jamming. We can reverse roles, because I'd love to hear your thoughts on all of these things too.
Oh, thanks so much, Davis. Really appreciate it.
Take care, John.
You too. Bye-bye.
Okay, bye.
That does it for our show. Thanks for listening to Jamming Their Transmission. I'm John Madera. Until next time, and always, be the strange you wish to see in the world.